Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 818th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today on our podcast, we have someone who grows a berry plant popular for its many health benefits. We're talking with returning guest John Moody about growing elderberries. John and his family homestead on 35 acres in the rolling hills of Kentucky outside of Louisville. Riddled with chronic illness and health problems in his 20s, John discovered the healing power of real foods properly prepared from real farms. He soon founded the Whole Life Buying Club, one of the largest alternative local food distribution approaches in the country. He is the author of 5 books, co-founder with Joe Salatin of the Rogue Food Conference, and well-known speaker at conferences across the country on health, food, farming, and freedom. You can find him at johnwmoody.com or their forthcoming family podcast, Resistance is Fertile. Gotta love that. John's written the Frugal Homestead book, Elderberry Handbook, and Winning the War Against Weeds. Welcome back to the show, John. Are you ready to rock?
Oh, you already know from our pre-call, I like talking about elderberry.
Oh, yes, you do. Thanks for coming on. I moved to Asheville 2 years ago and had a conversation with a young lady on my podcast who is an elderberry product provider. And she was on a previous episode of the podcast. And I asked her where she was getting her elderberries. And she said, mostly they come from Europe. And I said, what?
The last research I saw, 98% plus of all elderberry products purchased in America are made with European elderberries.
Wow. So in that moment, I said to her, well, hell, I can grow elderberries, not knowing how to grow elderberries. And so this was December of 22. By January of 23, I was a proud papa of 100 elderberry sticks, just the stick. And I was told what to do with them, and I followed directions. And by July of last year, we had 80 of them planted firmly in the ground, and I traded out the rest of them. So I'm an elderberry farmer. And when I remembered your elderberry book, which I'm reading now, I said to myself, gosh, we need to go get him back on the podcast and talk elderberries. So tell us about the people's medicine chest.
Yeah. So elderberry, where to even start? There is no plant in human history that has as much lore, as many recorded uses, as wide a historical distribution as the elderberry.
Wow.
So it's like the pig of the plant kingdom.
Oh, yes. You did say that.
It adapts to everywhere it goes. Just in North America, you find it all the way down into Central Florida. You find it all the way up to Newfoundland on the eastern side of the United States. It goes all the way across Canada and the central United States. It runs all along California, all the way up possibly into southern Alaska. And you even find varieties of it down into Mexico.
Wow.
It was once so prevalent in the United States that it was said you could hardly walk more than 100 yards without running into an elderberry.
Wow. And I get the sense, though, it's not just about the berries then.
Yeah. So the berries, probably up until the 600 or 700s AD, were typically the least prized part of the plant. So when you go back to the Roman Empire and you're looking through uses of the elderberry plant, there'd be all of these medicinal uses for the bark, for the leaves, for the shoots, for the pith, for the buds. And then they get to the berries and they'll make an offhand comment like, it's pretty good for hair dye.
Oh,
you can make ink out of it, writing ink out of the berries. Uh-huh. You can make wine, but the medicinal values of the berries were one of the latest kind of additions to an already easily 1500 to 2000 year old history of medicinal and other uses of the plant. Wow. And you know, for listeners, the medicinal uses of the plant most likely came after the practical uses of the plant. So when you go back to the earliest recordings and other things we have, there's obviously just the basic culinary use of any plant that produces berries and flowers. But the earliest words associated with the elderberry plant, like sambu, you go to a pharmacy and you can buy a sambucus supplement. Where does that word come from? It's an old word related to wind or to fire, because the earliest uses of elderberry were turning the wood into wind instruments or into a bellows for making fire, because you don't want to singe your eyebrows off.
Right.
So how do you blow air into a fire? But you can tell people about what's cool about the elderberry.
Some of the branches are hollow, right?
Well, all of the branches eventually become hollow.
Oh, interesting. You
know, really, technically, all of the branches are hollow, but when they're very small and they haven't hardened off yet, it would be very hard to remove the pith of an elderberry. I met a really cool dude over email who lives in Bavaria in Germany. And not only is elderberry used to make flutes, whistles, Native Americans used it to make wind chimes.
Oh,
that they'd
interesting.
Hang in trees. But in Germany and other parts of the world, they make blowguns, pop guns, even bows are made out of elderberry wood. So this guy on his website has beautiful traditional German bows made out of the traditional varieties of elderberry. So the wood itself, you can spend a lifetime doing nothing but learning to make crafts and other stuff out of elderberry wood. Especially for American history, I believe more in the West, because it has the blue elderberry, which is a much, much larger elderberry to play around with.
Right.
But flute making from blue elderberry wood was practically a sacred art for Native American tribes in the western half of the United States.
Wow. So the history is really wide on this.
They can get my book. I have a beautiful picture of an assortment of only elderwood flutes from a flute maker over in Europe in the book. It's on page 20. And so elderberry's use started with food and started with tools. We can estimate 2,500 BC, 3,500 BC, somewhere in there. But by the time you get to the medieval ages, the elderberry was really this one-stop shop for not just food, not just medicine, crafting, but then it had also taken on all of these kind of mythic qualities, which I'll come back to in a minute. Yeah, but Evelyn, one of the founders, I believe it's called the Royal Society in England, which was like a premier scientific organization for over 100 years. He says this, he goes, if the medicinal properties of its leaves, bark, and berries were fully known, I cannot tell you what our countrymen could ail for, which he might not fetch a remedy from every hedge, either for sickness or wounds.
Wow.
And I want to point out something here. When he says from every hedge, one of the primary historical uses of elderberry, even going back to Roman times, was for making living fences, protective hedgerows, privacy fences, similar things. So the Romans would sometimes use it, I believe, in inner courts, because most Roman houses, the house was an outside square or rectangle, and then in the center, the house was open.
Right.
And if you wanted to make that more private, they would plant actually living things inside of the central area of the house.
Yep.
Elderberry was one in a number of favorites, it appears, where they would create these elderberry hedges that were for privacy, for dampening sound. Another quote, trying to remember the author, it's in the book. Elderberry was so common in England for protecting gardens, both from four-legged and two-legged moochers coming along and going after your garden stuff. So for Evelyn, he's really not overstating that elderberry was just ubiquitous across England because it was valued for so many uses.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The other thing that's really fascinating about elderberry history is the plant was so important, especially across all of Europe, that it became entwined both with religion and with superstition. So you see this with Hans Christian Andersen, where he wrote The Emperor's New Clothes.
Yes.
He wrote The Ugly Duckling, but he also wrote a fairy tale called The Elder Fairy Godmother. And that really is a hearkening back to elderberry was so important to these people practically that it took on religious and superstitious connotations. So much so that when Christianity began to spread across Europe, the tree in certain parts of Europe was basically worshipped. And so one of the names they gave to the elderberry was the Arbor de Judas, the Judas tree. Because since elderberry have this very tangled, bent growing habit sometimes, they said that the tree had been permanent. It was the tree that Judas had hung on after he betrayed Christ. And that's why it was cursed, because of its Judas hanging on it. Because they were trying to break people from worshiping the tree. We associate it with Judas, maybe they'll quit worshiping this tree. So it's just another area you can spend a whole lifetime. Elderberry appears in Shakespeare multiple times. It appears, one of my favorite references to elderberry, though, to tell you just how popular culturally this plant is over in Europe, is Monty Python.
Uh-oh.
If you've ever seen The Quest for the Holy Grail, they go to a castle and there's the insulting Frenchman up on the battlement of the castle.
Oh, yes.
And they're bantering back and forth. And the Frenchman goes, "Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries." and that line is lost. Both lines tend to be lost on Americans. But he's basically saying your dad's a drunkard. He smells of elderberry wine and other elderberry drink. Just on the history and the crafting alone, you could spend a lifetime toying around with the plant. And I give you, hopefully, a really good taste of that with all of the historical images in the book.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's curious, is where did you get all these historical images from?
I have to keep a few of my secrets. there's a really great website. It's called archive.org, and they digitize all sorts of books and other historical records. I did an undergraduate and then I did master's work. And during my master's work, I learned how to do both research. Mm-hmm. And I also learned Latin, Greek, and Hebrew.
Oh, you told me about this recently so that you could actually read about it in different languages.
Yeah. So when I went to do research for the book, I could do research that's a little bit harder for other people to crack the nut on. Mm-hmm. Both in terms of understanding how to hunt down. I found a calendar from Nova Scotia from the 1700s. This is what a piece of history mm-hmm. that has a recipe for elderberry for treating what they call a quinfree. So this is an almost 400-year-old calendar.
Wow.
That, you know, I was able to hunt down when doing research for the book and all kinds of other. Since I wrote the book, I think I've compiled 200 or 300 additional historical images from the 1500s into the 1900s. And it's just like a little sliver of a taste. Like in here, I have one. This is from a book in 1890. Mm-hmm. It's called Wrinkles and Notions for Every Household. And this is oil of elder leaves for the treatment of bruises and wounds.
Oh.
Which also gives you this idea again. In Europe, there was a whole product line built around elder leaves for skincare, both treating injuries, but also then lip balm, facial creams, and other things.
Wow.
You're getting ideas here in the background. You're like, I can more than just the berries.
Yeah, it's an exploration. And I'm reading your book, and it's so jam-packed with great information. What got you to the point of saying, you know what, I need to write an elderberry book?
So around 2012 or 13 or 14, I was speaking at a conference, and walking through the conference, there was a vendor. And the vendor was giving away what looked like sticks to me. And I thought it was some kind of Harry Potter promotion, giving kids sticks. I'm like, this is weird. But the guy's like, no, he goes, these are elderberry cuttings. He goes, take this home, stick it in the ground, and come next year, you'll have the beginnings of an elderberry tree, elderberry bush. And they're giving away a couple to every kid. And I have a bunch of kids. So we went home with, I don't know, 8, 10 of these elderberry cuttings. And we stuck them in the ground and they began to grow. And I think it was probably around 2017, the buying club I founded had a lady who was making elderberry syrup for the members. And she decided she needed to be done doing that at that time. And I looked at my daughter and I was like, hey, do you want to take this over? This would be a great little side gig for you.
Right.
My daughter at the time was 12 or so, 13, yeah, around 11 or 12. And so we start making elderberry syrup and I advertised it on my Facebook and a few other places. And we started getting all of these orders. Wow. So it's like we as a family decided we'd invest a little bit more money in the business. And since I had some speaking coming up that fall, and I'm one of those speakers who I don't really like giving the same talk twice. So I'm always looking for what are new subjects I can speak on that will bless people and encourage them and help them. And I had about 6 months until the speaking gig, and I was like, I want to speak on elderberry at this upcoming conference. I pitch it to the conference people. And they're like, oh, that's a great idea, they said. They're like, interest in elderberry is skyrocketing.
Yeah.
And so I show up at this conference, and I go to give my elderberry talk, and it's standing room only.
Wow.
And I'm just like, and as soon as I finish the talk, everybody's, do you have a book? I was like, I don't, but I will by spring. And so then I went home from that conference and just took a good portion of 3 months and just threw myself into researching everything I could about elderberry and going as far back as the historical record would let me.
Wow. This is what I come to expect about you. But you dive into a topic and you take it through the roof. Good job, man.
Yeah. And elderberry is just such a fun one. It's really, for Americans, it's hard because I was on a podcast a number of years ago, not talking about elderberry, but it came up briefly because of our family business. And one of the guys interviewing me goes, elderberry? He goes, every kid, because he lives in Appalachia in Kentucky. And he goes, every kid has from their grandpa an elderberry pop gun that their grandpa made for them.
Wow.
There's every kid on every shelf. And elderberry, not quite as much as over in Europe, but elderberry was just very ubiquitous, even in early America. I was reading the lecture given after the Civil War by one of the doctors, where he was talking about doctoring during the Civil War when there was a lack of medicine and supply disruptions and all these problems. where he's talking about all the ways they were using elderberry during the Civil War because they could not get their hands on medicine from Europe anymore.
And you said something curious a little while ago, that you said a majority of our elderberries and products come from elderberries from Europe. Why do you think that's the case?
Partly because elderberry growing commercially in Europe goes way, way back, probably by the 1500s or earlier. Elderberry became a commercial crop in some ways in Europe, where its value to be traded, because it was used in beverages so heavily as a beverage ingredient. And it was used also in so many skincare and other products that they just have such a deep history and relationship with the plant and so many established uses that they developed the infrastructure geared towards commercial growing.
Got it.
Well, you're going to find out pretty soon once you start getting into harvest that doing elderberries on a commercial scale is a bit trickier than doing other berries, because you're not dealing with 12 strawberries to make 1 pound of strawberries. You're dealing with 800 tiny elderberries to make 1 pound of elderberries.
Yeah, I've started playing with how I'm going to manage that when it's time. My elderberries are coming up a year ago from sticks, and in June they'll be a year in the ground. So I'm figuring that this is year number two starts in June. Yep. And I'll harvest most of the flowers because I've got people that want the flowers.
Yes. And elder flowers, historically, they were more prized than the berries. The elder flowers are incredibly anti-inflammatory. They were widely used for treating injuries like sprains and bruises and other inflammatory conditions. They're used in making cordials over, and I think it's Germany and some other Eastern European countries, they will do breaded elder flowers.
Oh, I've heard, and then deep fry them.
And deep fry them. Okay. And you kind of like our funnel cake at the county fair. I always tell people what we do on our farm is our wild elderberry, we tend to take the flowers from, not overly heavily, but if we want elder flowers, we'll usually do our foraging for elder flowers. And then our elderberry bushes, we generally save for the berries. It will take just enough flowers off if a bush seems overly laden, like you sometimes do with a fruit tree. If it looks like it's going to be more than the fruit tree can support and bear, you might pinch off a bit of the fruit and flowers just so that you're not stressing the tree.
Yeah.
People pay very good money for the flowers.
So interestingly enough, Samara, who I interviewed, basically said, I'll take what you can grow. Since then, I've had another person that makes elderberry products say, I'll take your flowers and your berries. And the cooperative extension rep for small farms here says, Greg, if you're growing organic elderberries, I got a long list of people that want them.
Yeah, currently you will not run out of customers.
So this year I'm going to let a few of them turn into berries just so I start to experience that. But by July of 2025, I should have off of 80 trees or bushes, I should have hundreds of pounds.
It'll be the third year, but their first kind of full year of growth. So I think you can expect to get 5 to 8 pounds, maybe, depending on how rapidly they've grown.
Yeah.
You know, so you might be sitting on 300-400 pounds of berries.
Right.
Harvest and then process.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting. On a side note, are you still running your elderberry business?
Nope. We actually ended up selling it to some friends.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah,
so it was on past you.
Yeah, we love the business, but we ran into issues with lack of certified kitchen access.
Oh, yes.
And the family who took it over is a fabulous family. They've grown the business immensely since they took it over. And it's called Abby's Elderberry because it was named after my oldest daughter, Abigail.
Oh, nice. How cool is that? So look up Abby's Elderberries on the internet.
Yep, they're located just north of us in Indiana, about an hour from where we live. Wonderful homesteading family, just like our family. Gaggle of kids who do all the things my kids used to do in the business, and they still use our recipe.
Nice. And you mentioned running into problems with a commercial kitchen. Let's just touch on it now. You and Joel Salatin and your crew do a conference. How often? Every year?
We do them twice a year, move them around the country, and the next one's at Polyface in May.
In May. And this may or may not be, this one may or may not be out by May, but we did do a podcast in early April talking about the Rogue Conference. So if you want to know about it in depth, you can go listen to Joel and John talk about it. It was a great episode. And how do people find out more information about it and what's it about?
Yeah, so Rogue is about, and it was partly driven by things like this, because we looked at building a certified kitchen on our farm. And we had a really good inspector over our region of Kentucky. And he looked at me and said, "Your kids will be graduated from college before you will pay off building a certified kitchen on your farm."
Oi.
Because he was just being honest with me, they've made it unaffordable to do these things.
Yeah.
And so Joel and I started Rogue to show people possible paths for change and to encourage change in these areas that have made it very hard to outright impossible to have family homestead farm-based businesses, which are still the norm across most of the world.
Yes.
So I don't want 100 elderberry makers dominating the American elderberry market. I want 100,000 elderberry makers, one in every town,
Yep.
one in every county, where people have true choice
Yeah.
and people are actually getting to build not just their local economy, but as Thomas Jefferson said, agriculture is the backbone of any healthy economy. So, unless you have people who can use what farmers are producing, because people are always like, how do we get farmers to no longer grow only corn and soy? Well, you have to create markets for them to grow other things if you don't want to live in a sea of corn and soy, which means people have to be able to build profitable businesses off of all the other things farmers could grow. And elderberry is a great example of this. We're importing from Europe, probably the equivalent of 10,000 tons of elderberries a
Wow.
year. That might be a conservative low estimate between, and you could have probably 5,000 farmers in America growing elderberries right now if the businesses could easily use their product. So Rogue is all about helping people. Depending on when people listen to this, we'll have one in Texas, so November of 2024. And then we're doing our first one in 2025 in March down in Florida at a fabulous 65-acre permaculture farm in Central Florida. That's going to be a really fun Rogue for people who want to escape winter, wherever winter is in March, and go to Central Florida to a permaculture farm. It's going to be a great time.
Nice. And really, this is about the Rogue Conference from my conversation with you and Joel the other day. It's about figuring out how to sidestep and work around regulations that are so, I'll just
Okay.
say it, horrendous. That are ridiculous, that support big growers and chemically induced food and try and do away with small growers and organic. Did I get it close?
Yeah, although that's exactly it. Because again, what motivates Joel and I is a Twinkie should not be cheaper than a carrot. It just shouldn't be. How do we begin to fix this? And that's the people we bring to this conference to speak, people who really have found successful ways to circumvent the current system or to change it.
Yeah.
Because we need to do both at the same time.
Exactly. Oh my God, you said Twinkie and carrot, and I was at a grocery store recently, one of the local grocery stores here in Asheville, and there was this 4-year-old girl carrying around a carrot with the top still on it, and she took it up to her dad and said something like, "Can we take this home, Daddy?" Was like, "All right, there we go." I had a grin from ear to ear on that one. Awesome. All right, the URL for the Rogue Conference.
Is roguefoodconference.com.
Cool. And you do a couple of years. So whenever you
Yep,
listen to
two a
this,
year, all around the country.
whenever you listen to this, just jump onto the website and jump into the food fray, getting us healthy food. So I want to touch on, before we finish up, I want to touch on actually growing them. Because early on, you said you brought home sticks and stuck them in the ground. And when I discovered in January of 23, elderberries, I got 50 Adams elderberries and 50 Bob Gordon's elderberries. 50 Adams came from a local guy here in Asheville, and 50 Bob Gordon's came from Michael Kilpatrick and his crew. And what surprised me was that literally they sent me sticks. They were 10-inch long sticks with 6 nodes on them. For anybody that doesn't know it, a node is the bumps on the stems, and that's where the leaves and the roots and the flowers come from. Basically, my guy here in town said, just stick them in the ground. I wanted more success than that. So I put them in 4x4x9 pots with some healthy soil, some mycorrhizin, azomite, and like that. And 6 months later, I went from January to June. So I guess not quite 6 months later, 98 of them had actually flourished. I only lost 2 of 100. These grow pretty vigorously. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so elderberry embodies, I think he's a permaculture guy, maybe in Australia or New Zealand. He has a phrase where he says, we need to stop growing things that want to die and quit killing things that want to live.
Nice. You remember who that is?
He's Darren Daugherty or something. Joel knows him.
Okay. Darren
But
Doherty
he,
is a permaculture guy. So yeah.
yeah, I think that's his quip. And so elderberry really embody this idea. It's kind of like comfrey in that regard.
Yeah.
It's a plant that really wants to live. And we threw 8 or 12 sticks in the ground. I did no amending. I don't think I did follow-up watering properly. And we had a 75% success rate in our, at the time, very, very poor soil. So they're super, super easy plant to grow. The cheapest way to grow elderberry is not by buying live plants. A live plant will save you 6 months or so, but most of the time, if you're buying a live elderberry plant, especially from a nursery, you're going to be paying $15 to $30 for a live potted elderberry plant. Whereas if you get elderberry cuttings, which, as we've talked about a number of times now, are basically look like twigs, those you can often get if you're buying 10, 20, 30 of them at a time, you're looking at $2, $2.50, $3. I've seen them as cheap as if you're going to somebody locally when they're doing their pruning and stuff, you can get cuttings for a buck a cutting straight from the farm or homestead. And then you just take them home. One of my favorite ways to start the cuttings, especially if you don't want to spend a lot of money and you're short on space, is to either make a big wooden frame or find a big tote, like a big plastic tote or something similar, and you fill it with an appropriate potting mix and you just stick the sticks in. And you just keep things moist and you keep them in a cool, mostly shady place over winter into spring. And come spring, as you saw with yours, all of a sudden, like they burst to life. And you'll cut them out carefully to preserve the root formation. And then you transplant them into the ground and you're just off to the races. Elderberry are a fruit. Your listeners, because you are a way more experienced fruit guy than I am by far. But generally, the rule fruit is a minimum 3-year crop.
Yep.
The sleeps, creeps, leaps idiom.
Yeah, I saw that in your book, and I've not heard that before. I've already said roots, shoots, fruits.
Okay.
That's the one I've used. And when I read that last night, it was like, oh, cool. That's so year one, year two, and year three. And that's pretty much what I'm doing here is we're starting year two coming up in June.
Yeah. So year one, they kind of sleep. There, you see a little bit of growth. And this is good because you want the plant doing almost all its growth underground.
Mm-hmm.
So the plant is very busy that first year, building a sufficient foundation to ensure long-term health and fruitfulness.
Yeah.
And then the second year, it'll creep. It's now able to devote more resources to above ground growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then in year 3 and 4, elderberry go crazy. Now, obviously, again, if you have somebody locally, another way you can cut down on your elderberry growing time, you can cut basically a whole year off, is you're going to experience this in a couple years, but elderberry like to spread.
Yes, I've started seeing that.
Yeah, they put out lateral runners that turn into more plants, which is a problem when you're trying to do commercial growing for space management, airflow, keeping the plants healthy, having room to work. It's a great opportunity to dig and sell plants. And then people are getting a year one plant
Oh,
if you dig them out properly. Again, you have to have somebody locally who has varieties you want to try.
Yeah.
But you can sell plants like that for $5, $6, $7 a plant.
Yep.
And they're going to be getting a year one plant and you'll get a little more money out of it. So there's a number of ways to manage them and to manage their unruly growth, as we like to refer to it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I've already noticed that. So we're just coming up on 10 months in the ground. Everything's budded out. I planted 81 in the ground and 80 of them made it. One of the tiny ones didn't make it. But one of the things I noticed was coming up from the ground, not from the branches, in a couple of places, they're starting to shoot up shoots.
Yep. Yeah, they're very aggressive. It depends on the variety. So some elderberry have more of a hedgerow habit. Some elderberry have more of a tree habit. So some elderberry love to put out dozens and dozens of shoots all around the main and then zip up new canes.
Yep.
So more similar to a raspberry or a blackberry, whereas some elderberry really are more tree, shrub-like in growth. And they'll have fewer very, very large centralized growth trunks. And so this is a consideration when you're looking at varieties. I think in America, there are now 60 to 80 named commercial varieties of elderberries on the market.
Wow.
And I mentioned this in the book. Some of them are classified as ornamental. So even if you're in an HOA or somewhere, you can go after some of these ornamental. I'd plant a regular elderberry and say it's ornamental. And the service berry is considered an ornamental, but it's more nutritious than blueberries and it's edible. And I just do the same thing with elderberry. I'd say, no, like elderberry, look, all these catalogs have elderberry for sale as an ornamental and tell your HOA to go pound sand.
Right.
But there's a lot of varieties now to choose from. And I want to touch on this real quick,
because
your listeners might be saying, John, since elderberry does grow wild, why don't I just go take cuttings from a wild elderberry?
Yes.
You can do that. The challenge you run into is if you're going to do elderberry that way, you really have to study the elderberry plants you're taking cuttings from and make sure they show good characteristics for actually harvesting elderberries. Because, for instance, one thing that makes elderberries harder for birds to predate on so heavily is if the bushes have a drooping manner. So some elderberry bushes, the berries tend to be oriented more upright, vertically, which says to a bird, come eat me. On some other bushes, the fresh green growth each year that the berries form on is longer, and the branches are more pliable. So the berry clusters tend to hang down, which makes them both less visible to birds, and the birds can't eat that way as easily. So the reason commercial elderberry varieties have become so popular is because they have better growth characteristics. And now, in all of these commercial elderberry varieties, unlike some other plants, really were just somebody who saw a wild bush and really liked the morphology and other characteristics of it. And then they stewarded it. Elderberry is one of these plants where the difference between a domesticated or named variety and a native variety is really, really narrow. Unlike if you look up a wild banana versus a modern banana, or a wild avocado versus domestic, and a bunch of these other plants where they've really been heavily, I hate to use the word tampered with, but you sometimes look and you're like, wow, we got from here to there. With elderberry, the named varieties like Adams or Bob Gordon, it was just Bob Gordon found a really good looking elderberry plant. He took cuttings from it and he kept the best of what those cuttings produced a couple times. And now you have a Bob Gordon, but it's still almost indistinguishable from a wild elderberry. And genetically, it is truly indistinguishable.
And that, I'll tell you what, thank you for that. That was worth the price of admission for me today. No, just knowing that, because that'll inform me how I'm pruning the bushes as we move forward. Because you don't want to prune all the branches back short so that they can't hang over themselves.
Yeah, if, and again, this I talk some about pruning in my book. And for people who are really going to get into commercial growing, there's an excellent organization in America called the Midwest Elderberry Cooperative. It's ran by a gentleman I'm friends with. His last name is Patton. And this organization is solely devoted to building a domestic American elderberry market. And all of the farmers and homesteaders that will supply that market. And the University of Missouri has two professors who have done a ton of great research on American elderberry. And because one of the main differences between American and European elderberry, so that the elderberry bush, how much, I'm going to try and make this quick. And then if I need to come back sometime, we can shoot the breeze on this one. Nothing in nature wants to be eaten. It's a really bad survival strategy to be eaten. The only thing in nature that generally wants to be eaten are berries. That's why they're very bright in color, so they stand out against the foliage. And berries contain seeds that tend to be indigestible to birds, to mammals, and other things. Plants don't want to be eaten generally, though. So, what do plants do when animals try and eat them? They try and kill the animals. How do they kill the animals? Through chemical warfare. So, chemical warfare is not a new thing that humans created. Plants have been doing it ever since there were animals running around. An elderberry has a very crude approach to chemical warfare. It contains compounds that turn into cyanide when you eat the plant. And this is why, if you do crafting with elderberry, you do have to dry the wood properly to drive the cyanide, because every part of an elderberry plant contains cyanide, except for the flowers and the berries of certain varieties. One of those varieties is the American canadensis variety, which is the most common one in the US. So the European berries, though, unlike the American berries, do contain cyanide-forming compounds. So you can use fresh American berries in ways you cannot use fresh European berries. And it may not be that every single European variety contains cyanide in the berries, but the majority, it appears from research that was done years ago, you can't straight up eat raw elderberries over in Europe, but you can from the Canadensis American berry. You can't do that with the red elderberry in America. Its berries are toxic when raw unless properly prepared.
Interesting.
So one of the things you get into when you start working with elderberry leaves or other parts of the plant is you really do need to do your homework and know what you're preparing and know how it's going to be used so you don't make yourself or someone else sick. The nice thing is cyanide is not hard to get rid of. I believe, if I remember correctly, it volatilizes. And for listeners who may not be familiar with that word, to volatilize means to turn into a gaseous form. So I think it volatilizes off at 78 degrees.
Oh, wow.
So I believe the Native Americans sometimes would cure their flutes and stuff in the sun or over the embers of a dying fire, because you just need just enough warmth to drive the cyanide out of the whatever you're working with. This is why when you're working with European berries, minimum cook times are very important, because you want to make sure you're removing all of the cyanide
Well,
that the berries might contain.
and really, when you're preparing anything for preservation long term, there's rules that you need to pay attention to, especially when you're canning and like that. So, just as a caveat, make sure that you know what you're doing when you're harvesting and using those berries.
But the American Canadensis are, from the testing the University of St. Louis has done, the safest of any variety of elderberry to eat straight off the bush. And they require minimal cooking and other things to turn into all sorts of fun elderberry stuff.
Nice. Thank you so much. Any final thoughts about elderberries?
I'll tell your listeners this, because I think this is in the book, but if they want to know why, when they were children, they learned to count from a blood-sucking vampire on the TV show Sesame Street.
Oh my gosh. You teased me with this the other day and said
Oh,
I
did
had
I
to
not
wait.
finish it?
No, you said we had to wait until we recorded.
Okay, I'll end with this then. So I grew up, child of the 80s and 90s, watched Sesame Street. And I never understood why a vampire is who taught me my numbers until I did research for my elderberry book. And now you're gonna be like, well, what on earth does elderberries have to do with vampires, have to do with counting? So travel with me in your mind to Eastern Europe, to Transylvania or one of these other places where it's the medieval ages. And you go to bed at night, sometimes with your knees knocking, because you think there might be a vampire wandering around the countryside looking for you and your family. How are you going to stop the vampire?
Well, I'm not going to count.
What do most people say to themselves? How would they stop a vampire?
Isn't it a stake of wood, isn't it?
You really want to go hand-to-hand combat with a vampire?
Not really.
No. But feel like holy water. Holy water is expensive. Silver was expensive. So in Far Eastern Europe, they would put clusters of elderberries or elderflowers on their windowsills in the evening to keep vampires away. But why?
That's a good question.
Do you know what the earliest attested weakness of vampires is outside of sunlight?
Elderberries?
Course, you don't. No, it's obsessive compulsive counting disorder. Seriously. So you go back and read all of this really, really
Wow.
old literature. Whoever worked on Sesame Street was somebody who is clearly overqualified for the job. for them to sneak the Count being a vampire into the show, knowing that, of course, it has to be a vampire who teaches you to count, because vampires have to count. So a vampire would come along to your cottage and you'd go to climb through the window.
Well, hold on.
But
and wants to count the berries.
Not wants to. Has to. It's not an option for vampires. They have to count objects they come across. They literally have no choice. It is their weakness. They have to count them. And if you've ever dealt with a cluster of elderberries, you try and start counting and you lose your spot and your place. So you and the vampire would be at your windowsill all night trying to count the elder flowers or the elderberries. And then the sun would begin to rise, and discouraged and upset, the vampire would scurry away and you and your family would be safe.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
It's well, when I finally realized the connection there, I was like, that is why the Count on Sesame Street is a vampire.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. And your book, tell us a little bit about your book and where people can find it.
You can get my book at my website, johnwmoody.com. It's not a super long book on purpose. It is a lot of information on every page.
Yeah, I was going to say so, it's pretty dense and good. I'm loving it.
So it's everybody who have had buy it for the most part loves it, because the chapters are broken up by history, by growing, by care, then by use. So you can pop to the part of the book you most want to read at the time, or you can easily read it in one sitting. But I wanted to make a very good book that covers all your bases and gets you more excited about the plant.
And it's doing that. It's absolutely doing that. It's called The Elderberry Book. And I have to tell you, rarely do I read a nonfiction book. I'm a fiction book reader. I listen to nonfiction books. I got your book and I've been reading it. So,
yeah. Well, and the images in the book is one reason this book is not a good audio book. Because I think in the book I have maybe 100 total images.
Yeah, they're great.
And some of them, again, you're not going to find these images anywhere else.
Nice.
So, because I'm the only one who has this collection of crazy images.
Yeah. Yay, very great. It is The Elderberry Book by John Moody, and you can find it at johnwmoody.com. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Again, it's any chance I get to talk about elderberry is a good day.
And any chance you can share how our listeners can get a hold of you besides your website?
I'm on Facebook, and there's my website. I'll be at Homesteaders of America this year speaking.
Nice.
I'll be at the Independence Festival in Ohio in June. Speaking, that's going to be a really great event for people in the Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, West Virginia, Kentucky region. And I'm on my website. And again, we're hopefully by June, we'll start releasing episodes of our podcast that's going to be all about helping people build productive households.
Wow. Okay. So what's it called again?
It's going to be called Resistance is Fertile.
Nice. Nice. When you get it up and running, let's have you come back and we'll do an episode on the Urban Farm Podcast about that.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely. You can also find show notes from today's podcast at urbanfarm.org/The Elderberry Book.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.